Good evening, folks. This is Carolyn Evers, and as you know, this is one of my favorite times of the week to be here talking to you, sharing ideas with you, and you calling in and sharing ideas with me. And as a special surprise, there is someone here that you just might recognize, and that is Dr. Richard Presser.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone.
Now, isn't that a surprise?
Well, not to you or me.
Yeah, Richard's visiting here in Baltimore with me, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been like old times, and we're struggling with each other like we have in the past. And tonight, we are here at your disposal, talking about any subject that you want to talk about. But, Richard, we haven't decided what we're going to talk about tonight. And I was thinking, should we talk about some of Dr. Ian Stevenson's work?
By all means, Carolyn, why don't you go ahead?
I was going to give you the introduction.
Well, I'm not really across his work as much as you are, Carolyn. I think we did touch a little bit on it last week. In simple terms, he has demonstrated researching with children. He's demonstrated unequivocally that children have been born who have very clear recall of past lives. They've had memories that they've recalled, and he's done the research to validate that those memories are accurate. And I believe the numbers are something like 2,500 children that he's worked with, and over half have validated, had those memories validated. So it's pretty clear that there's validity to this notion.
Thank you, Richard. Well, at least here in the States, I don't know about Australia, but reincarnation is not something that we talk about with our children. I think the Catholic Church has changed that. At one time, they taught reincarnation. Mention that, Richard, because I know you know about that.
Yes, the Catholic Church in its early days taught that reincarnation was real, and that applied up to, I believe, the 4th century. It's not well recognized today that in the early days of the Catholic Church, it was subservient to the state of Rome, and so the emperor was all-powerful, and the Pope, if you will, was subservient to the emperor. And then with the fall of Rome, the church became all-powerful and the state became pretty secondary. And so in the time of Emperor Justinian, when the emperor was still all-powerful, you might say, he specified, if you will, that the Roman Catholic Church should change its stance on the subject of reincarnation, because I don't know exactly how this works, but the emperor in those days considered themselves to be God, if you will. And on some level, Justinian decided that the notion that people could reincarnate was inconsistent with the notion that he was God. And so he banned reincarnation, and it was from the 4th century and the time of Emperor Justinian that the Catholic Church changed its stance on reincarnation. And so people simply accept that the teachings of the Catholic Church say that reincarnation doesn't exist, but in fact, if you look back far enough, it did teach the direct opposite of that.
Thank you for bringing that forth, Richard. I'm hoping that people will call in if they remember past lifetimes, or if they have met other people that they remember being with in a past lifetime. I know I've mentioned this before, but we travel with a group of souls. And these souls all interact with one another. Sometimes the parents or the siblings or the grandparents. And you might be in a position that you remember some of these situations. And if you do, give us a call. I was fortunate enough to do a lot of traveling with women who seemed to be, at least the women that I traveled with, seemed to be very interested in these questions. And some of them remembered being with me in another past lifetime. And I remembered them. I remember being an American Indian here in the United States. And I had a medicine bag that I carried with herbs in it. And so in my younger years, I was very much interested in the different herbs. And I've got books on herbs and how you use them for different purposes. And so maybe you have some stories like that in your lifetime. Give me a call at BBS if you do. Share them with me and our listeners. I think it would be of help to everyone. And the reason that I say this is I think it's fair enough to say, in a sense, that we all have fear of crossing over. And recently I've had several people that I'm aware of and rather close with that have crossed over. And what they tell me is how when they cross over, they are interested in studying works of philosophers, or they tell me exactly what they're doing on the other side, and it is interesting. And in one particular case, someone has crossed over and left a dear one here who is carrying their child. And they have explained to me how they surround that child and her with their energy to soothe them because they're carrying a great deal of sorrow with their crossing. And so those on the other side have a great deal of power, and they are with us. I've spoken to some people on this particular show where they have felt friends and relatives being with them. And we have connected people with others, and they have felt their energy. And so if you want to talk about this, call in. We're glad to be talking about this. Richard, I don't think you have a sense of any of these memories, do you?
No, Carolyn, I've relied on your extraordinary recalls and ability to see these things to spell some of those out for me. But the question, I guess, that arises, Carolyn, is what would you describe as your most vivid past life memory?
Because my what?
You have your most vivid, most powerful past life memory, because you have many past lives that you recall. Which would you describe as the most powerful for you?
Well, this really wasn't a past life, but what is most vivid for me is something that happened in my current life. I remember my soul coming down to earth to join with this body. And as it was coming down, it was singing the praise of Prime Creator. And I can feel that so vividly. I can feel it in every organ and cell in my body, what that was like. I could see myself coming down through the dimensions. It was quite extraordinary.
Quite a story, Carolyn. So, that's an interesting scenario. But coming back to my question, which you studiously avoided, what would be the most vivid past life memory that you have? Which lifetime triggers most strongly for you?
Well, it was a lifetime that I had with your soul, actually.
Okay.
And I think I told you about this particular one.
Probably have.
In that particular lifetime, Richard, you were a Roman soldier. I don't know how that feels to you, but I could see you in my mind's eye ever so strongly. You were tall, beautifully built. And it was the time of the persecution of the Christians. And I was a Christian in that lifetime. One of the apostles had come to Rome, and I, along with others, were following him. And you suggested that I leave because, as a Roman soldier, you knew that the Christians were going to be blamed for the burning of Rome. And I didn't leave, and I can recall so clearly saying to you, I can't leave my friends. And so I was caught up in this net that went out and captured the Christians, and they were put into the ring with the lions. And unfortunately, you were captured with me. And I can see this so clearly. This hungry lion that was released and stalked the two of us. And in my mind's eye, I can see its eyes. It was like an amber color. And it glowed from the inside. And I knew what it was going to do. It was going to pounce on me. And you stepped in front of me, trying to protect me. And the lion pounced on you and killed you in an instant. And at that moment, I see the two of our souls moving upward to the center, to where Prime Creator was located. So perhaps that's my most vivid, Richard. I'm not sure I could get any more vivid than that.
That's pretty striking, Carolyn. I'm not sure I'd do something so chivalrous these days, but nevertheless, it's quite a story.
Oh, you're just so full of chivalry, you're not even aware of it. Now, there's a man that's full of it.
Yeah, that I accept. Chivalry is another matter. Full of it, absolutely.
Men's full of chivalry.
Oh, is that what I'm pulling? Okay.
So come on, guys. We got lots of things to talk about. Give us a call at BBS. Let us talk about those things. You can either speak to me or you could speak to your friend Richard. This is probably going to be the last Jeff. Opportunity that you have while he is here. What did I hear? Did I hear you say Jeff?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Jeff.
Thank you. Hi, Jeff. What can we do for you?
I called you a month or two ago, and you gave me some really cool advice. I've had some chronic health problems for a decade or two, and you said to call you back after I'd done your homework, which was to imagine my body's healthy and vigorous and doing well. So I've been doing that, you know, every chance I can get, and I thought I'd just let you know. I haven't seen anything shift on the physical yet. Do you know if I'm doing it right?
Well, it sounds to me like you're doing it right. Richard, do you want to add anything to that?
No, I really wasn't party to the conversation, Carolyn, so I'll let you run with that.
Well, it seems right to me. But so, even though you're not a party to this call, Richard, you can address this concept of the human physical body, imagining the voice, imagining the physical body being healed and strong.
Sure. So, Jeff, what's the nature of your health issues that you've been suffering from?
I have some bad discs, and then I've been told that I have chronic fatigue syndrome.
Oh, chronic fatigue syndrome. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what steps have you been taking to clear the chronic fatigue?
Well, everything under the sun. I live in Los Angeles, so I got seen some of the best people I could find. But so you name it, I've tried it.
Tell me what you've done diet-wise.
I've cut out sweets and gluten and dairy. And
when you say cut out gluten, have you just cut out gluten or have you cut out wheat and other grains?
It's hard to do more the latter.
So you say you've cut out grains and you've cut modern wheat out of your diet?
Yes, not all grains, but most all grains. I do eat rice and I've tried to stay away from anything that's on a sort of a standard American diet.
Are you familiar with the work of William Davis, Dr. William Davis?
No, I'm not.
He has written a book called Wheat Belly.
I've heard him on the radio. Uh-huh.
You can find him on YouTube. There's a whole bunch of videos from him. There's one that runs about an hour and 5 minutes, which is taken from a seminar that he did, which I think is a very good illustration of what he has to say. Cutting to the chase, if you listen to, for example, that presentation, but there are others, you will find that in a situation like yours, he would recommend that you remove all grain from your diet, at least for a period of time. He explains how wheat has been interfered with. And so the wheat that's in our diet, for most examples, is a wheat that came into the American diet in about 1980. And it's a created wheat, and this work occurred prior to GMO, so it doesn't get caught by the genetic modification label, but what's been done to it amounts to genetic modification. It's just that GMO techniques were not used to achieve it. But the results are the same, and so it does horrific things in the body. So when you understand, and he says, I wish I could say that I discovered this, but I didn't really. He was a cardiovascular physician and I think surgeon, and he was treating his patients with statin drugs and all this kind of stuff, and then he realized that he was just treating the symptoms. He wasn't really getting to the cause of the problem, and so he started to go looking, and he began to discover all of these issues, particularly around modern wheat, but grain in general for those who have the sensitivity. And so I recommend that you view that, but his recommendation would be to get all grain out of your diet, at least for a period of time. And, especially when you have that kind of reactivity and sensitivity that you do. And it's tough, but it's just the question is, do you want to get better or not? And I would think that you'd be willing to do pretty much anything to get rid of what's going on for you. And I'm not giving this to you as some kind of absolute guarantee, but that's where I would begin. I'd get all grain out of your diet, and that pretty much means you can't eat processed food of any type. You really need to go back to working with individual foods and preparing it yourself, or have someone prepare it for you, and you know, avoid flour that's made from any grains, really, and of course, you know, refined sugar. And get all those things out of your diet, and eat particularly plant-based food. But you know, you don't have to avoid meat per se. Although you know, I'd be careful about meat, because so much meat in this country is grain-fed, and so it's likely to feed through. So I would, you know, again, if I were you, if it were me in your shoes, you know, I'd probably look to become a vegetarian and just eat food prepared from the single ingredients, and eat single ingredient food. I would go back to the kind of diet that your great grandparents probably ate, except I'd exclude the bread from it, the grains and all the things that are associated with it. Go back to single ingredient foods that are prepared raw or very lightly cooked. That's where I would go, and see what happens.
Give some examples of that, Richard, if you can.
Sure. Well, you can
single ingredient foods. Explain that.
Well, you buy I don't know, beans and snow peas and carrots and broccoli and so on, and fruit, and you base your diet on those things, and you very lightly cook them. I would look to probably cook in coconut oil, because again, that's getting you back to a very pure, clear, single food that's not been screwed around with. And coconut oil is such an extraordinary aid to the body on so many levels. and so that's where I would go. So I'd cook a little like the Chinese. I'd cook a little like the Chinese do. If you think about how the Chinese cook, you know, they have a little oil in a wok, and they throw some vegetables in. Yes, they put in rice and other things, but you know, if you think about their cooking, it's very basic technique, largely.
Yeah, I think there's almost nobody who wouldn't benefit a lot from a pure diet. That's I keep trying to make mine more pure. But I was wondering if you have a sense, Carolyn, if there's any change I should do in my visualizations, or you have, or if
wait
you
a minute, dear, I'm having
there.
Trouble hearing you. Any change in what?
Visualization, he said.
In visualization.
That you prescribed for me, yeah. Do you feel like that's being done correctly, or that it should be continue?
I'm asking that question of your body, and what I'm hearing is it would even be more beneficial to you to take a hand mirror. Did we talk about that before? Take a mirror that you can hold in your hand and look mm-hmm. into that mirror, the eyes in particular, and tell yourself, command yourself that you intend to be healed on every level, that every part of your body find the perfection of your journey here to Earth, that you are in perfect health. Can you feel that when I say that to you, what it feels like in your body?
It was sort of a long sentence. Could you repeat it? I intend to heal on every level.
Every part of your body. You look into that hand mirror. Look into mm-hmm. the eyes. And command that your body be healed, and it is in its perfect perfection of what the body intended, that you are perfect. And when I say that to you about being perfect, how do you feel?
Well, what immediately comes to mind is that I've always been an extreme perfectionist. And I've always been really disappointed. I can't. Oh.
So I have a question for you when I hear that. Do you forgive yourself?
That's Richard. That's what I've, in all these years of searching for what the bottom line is about why I'm ill. That's the bottom line I've come to, is that there's some karma, some dark stuff that I did in past lives that I don't know what it is, but I haven't forgiven myself entirely for it. And that's where I'm kind of stuck because without knowing what it is, it's hard to forgive it.
You don't need to revisit all that stuff. You just have to be willing to forgive yourself. So I want you to say after me, I forgive myself.
I forgive myself.
For anything that I have done.
For anything that I have done.
In any past lives.
In any past lives.
And in this life.
And in this life.
And I forgive.
And I forgive.
Everyone.
Everyone.
Who has done anything to me.
Who has done anything to me.
Or to anyone that I care about.
Or to anyone that I care about.
In this life.
In this life.
Or in any past life.
Or in any past life.
And so it is.
And so it is.
Now, what I suggest you do, you see, the problem with trying to be perfectionist is you'll always fail. So let me introduce you to my philosophy. My philosophy is that I expect to screw up every day. Not only that, but I usually exceed my expectations. And you see, in my view, that unless you're screwing up, unless you're doing, you know, you're failing on some level, you're not really growing. You're not really testing yourself. And so, you know, making mistakes, making errors, screwing up, doing the wrong thing by someone is just part of life. Perfection is a nonsense. You fail by definition. And so the thing to do is when you realize that you've done something other than what you would wish, or in some manner you've slighted someone or done the wrong thing by someone, forgive yourself and forgive them. And if it's significant enough, apologize. And if it's serious enough, ask for their forgiveness. But that's the end of it, Jeff. There is nothing else. It's finished. There is no karmic overhang that's going to come back and bite you later in this life or some other. That's only your perception. Energetically and spiritually, there's nothing else going on.
Well, perfection, that's what our muscle testing tells me, is that I am fully forgiven already, and it's myself that I just haven't done it 100% myself.
So do it. I forgive myself, and do it as often as you, whenever you feel that sense that you might not have forgiven yourself or somebody else, just do it, you know? It's not like, you can run out of times to say it or, do it too often. You can't. Do you see? If in doubt, forgive yourself. I apologize to people all the time over the slightest thing. You see, I don't want to carry that stuff around, and I don't want them carrying it around in regard to me. I don't want that. So when I do something even of the slightest nature that might in some manner be misinterpreted by somebody, or, you know, if they actually are offended by it, I apologize. It doesn't mean I'm not blunt with people at times. As Carolyn will tell you, I'm probably as blunt as you're going to find at times. It's not actually about that. I'm not being subtle with you here and now. I think you would agree with that. I'm being very direct. But, you see, that's different. I'm not doing anything to offend you.
You've always seemed incredibly gracious to me.
Thank you.
And no, you haven't.
I'm sorry, I haven't.
You haven't been too blunt with me.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief. Well, and if I have, I apologize.
You're forgiven.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you both very much. I will keep. I'll keep at it. I'm writing down your wisdom, and I'm going to keep acting on it.
Good.
God bless you.
That's all
thank
there
you so
is.
Much.
Forgiveness and love. There is nothing else.
Let me ask you a question, Jeff. Do you carry a pain in you?
Yes. And this last few weeks, I've had two more pains that have come up out of nowhere, and I almost can't walk now. And I can't use my right arm, and I can barely walk just because of the pain in my left foot.
And do you carry an emotional pain in you? Like you fear you're failing or something like that?
I think, being a perfectionist, yeah, I think there's a lot of things probably I feel pained about. It's possible that I haven't forgiven my parents for everything, too. I had a pretty hard time with them as a child.
Well, you know, I'm feeling that you could benefit from doing a soul healing session with me. Because
I didn't know you did.
That opens a lot of doors. Sorry?
I didn't even know that you did that.
Yeah, I don't do it so much anymore. I used to do a lot of it, but it's not that I've forgotten how to do it. It's just that, you know, I've kind of moved on to other things. But
While we're talking about that, can you explain to him what you do in a soul healing session?
Yes. One of the things that I do is that I have been given a command to heal, to clear all negative past life karmic energies. It's a command that was given to me by Lord Metatron when Carolyn and I first started working together. And interestingly enough, it was one of the very first things that I was called upon to bring, in other words, to channel myself. So it was kind of interesting process. And so I do that clearing work, and then I teach you some tools that go above and beyond where we've been working today. But in a way, they're additive, you might say, to the kind of things we've been talking about here, to heal ourselves in this life. You see, the view that I've come to, and I see it being confirmed in the work of others, is that the body is a very faithful servant. And so illness and disease that it displays is really a signaling system to us that there are underlying emotional and spiritual issues that need healing. And unless we heal those things, then we won't heal in any lasting sense, whatever the health issue is that we have. And so I give you tools that if you use them diligently will enable you to heal yourself in this lifetime and set yourself free of this. Now, I'm not saying this is some magical cure to what's going on in the physical, because these things develop to some degree a life of their own. And some people find health issues just simply evaporate. Others don't. I'm not saying it's a magical cure, but certainly taking care of those things that sit behind the physical manifestation is a very, in my opinion, a very important thing to do. So ultimately, you know, healing is something that we need to do for ourselves, bottom line. And given the searching you've been doing, you don't sound like you're somebody that's shy to do what is necessary to heal yourself. It's what you're trying to do. But most people don't quite understand how to get it done. So there are the things that I do. Okay. So
I'd be very. That's very. That sounds like exactly the missing piece that I haven't quite handled yet on my own. How would I contact
I'll give you my U.S. personal number, which is 410-500-4547. 410-500-4547. That will get me anywhere I am. That'll get me anywhere in the world.
Oh, terrific. I will contact you.
Okay.
Well, thank you. God bless you both. I just love your show, and I'm so glad you're back, Richard. Thank you both for the wonderful service you're doing for the globe via this program.
Thank you. It's something that we both wish to do, is to serve humanity and the earth itself.
There's nothing more needed at this time, I think, than that.
I think that's
yes,
true.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true. But I take a lot of heart, Jeff. I believe we live in a special time in history, special time on planet Earth. And it will see this
absolutely.
Darkness that has, this darkness that controls our world, it will be cleared and humanity will be set free. May it be so.
From your lips to
good
God's ears,
to you,
amen. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the last sentence, Carolyn.
I said good talking to you, my friend.
Oh, good. Oh, yeah. Likewise. Thank you so much. God bless. And I'll call you back another Saturday, too. All right. Take care. Thank you so much.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Jeff.
So if there are some others who would like to call in and discuss some of the things that we talked about, I'd love to hear from you. Maybe your own stories about reincarnation, or are your children speaking to you about other lifetimes? We have a tendency not to allow the child to bring forth any memories that it might have of reincarnation. So, Richard, do you have anything to add to this?
Not at the moment, Carolyn. I think, you know, there's little doubt in my mind about the notion of reincarnation, the notion that we are far more than just this physical expression. As we're talking here, I'm reminded of the book by a woman called Anita Morjani. It's not exactly on reincarnation per se, but it certainly connects in with it. And Anita wrote this book called Dying to Be Me. And Anita, I think she was living, she's of Indian extraction. I think she was living in Hong Kong, maybe Singapore, but I think Hong Kong. And in simple terms, without telling her story in detail, she reached the point where she was literally at death's door as a result of cancer. And so she went into the hospital. Her husband took her into hospital in a very poor state of health. You know, she was at a point where she was almost choking on her own fluids. She had open wounds on her body that wouldn't heal. I mean, she was in a pretty bad way. And as she went into hospital, she went into a coma. And the medical staff basically told her husband that she wouldn't recover from this. And while she was in the coma, she experienced, in a sense, crossing over and beginning to move into the light, where she met up with her father, who had crossed over, and her best friend, who had crossed over as a result of cancer, and here they both were. And she just felt this incredible love from them. And she had this feeling that if she decided to continue to cross over, that the tests that had been sent off analyzing the state of her essential organs would show that, you know, she wouldn't recover and that would be that. But if she chose to return, those tests would come back showing that, in fact, she was showing signs of recovery and you know, may well pull through. And she felt that she had a story to tell the world about what she'd come to learn as a result of all this experience. And so she decided to come back, and lo and behold, the tests came back showing that her organs had begun to recover. And not only that, she greeted a doctor by name who she'd never met, who she'd witnessed from her altered state, you might say, speaking with her husband in the corridor a couple of rooms down from where she was in the hospital, as I say, much to the doctor's surprise. And amazingly, she made this very rapid recovery and was taken out of intensive care within a fairly short amount of time. And as I mentioned, she had these huge wounds on her body, which the specialists were saying she would need surgery to repair, but because she was in such poor health, they wanted to wait a while. And lo and behold, these incredible wounds simply began to heal by themselves. And she made this absolutely remarkable recovery, and the cancer completely disappeared from her body. And she came to understand that she had gone through this experience so that she could personally and vividly understand the nature of life and how, as I said, illness and disease is a result of effectively emotional and spiritual issues of various sorts, and that people can heal themselves. And hence her book, Dying to Be Me. It's an extraordinary book, and I encourage everybody to read it. It's a very uplifting book and quite a story. I have actually written about it, you know, maybe a couple of years ago now on my blog. Some of you know, but many of you may not. I write a blog which is just under my name, richardpresser.com, which gets into all kinds of stuff, whatever it is I feel like writing about on any given day. But and you can read what I wrote about Anita Morjani if you just key Anita, A-N-I-T-A, into the search field on the top right-hand side of that blog. You will find that article that I wrote about Anita, which kind of summarizes her story and tells in a bit more detail than I've recalled here. But in terms of understanding a little more about the nature of what it means to be human, about this relationship between health and emotional and spiritual issues and so on, I thoroughly recommend Anita's book. It is a beautiful story. And there are lots of videos, again, on YouTube of Anita telling her story, so you can watch it there if you want a summary. But the book is definitely worth reading.
That's an amazing story, Richard.
Yes, it is. It's, as I say, it's quite an uplifting story. And she was promoted by, I wish I could think of his name, a wonderful man who got leukemia and crossed over in the last year or two, was living in Hawaii. Some of you will recall. It's gone out of my head for the moment. Not Stephen Covey, it doesn't matter. But she was picked up by him and promoted through his work, which gave her a lot more publicity. And in a sense, I think may have actually helped to get her book published. But it's quite a story.
We have a lot to talk about. How about people calling in and giving me their take on the election, this recent election, and tell me what you think about it, how you feel things went?
Feeling like triggering a bit of divisiveness, Carolyn, are you?
Well, not really, because on my last show, I had asked people to intend that the best candidate be elected who would be a statesman to our country. And here, the next week, we find that we have elected a president, and I was just wondering if what people felt about that, if they felt he was the best candidate. So there's a lot of things that you could call about and discuss with us. We would love hearing from you. Something that I find interesting, Richard, is in Australia, where you live, that people are obligated to vote.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about that.
Well, Australia is one of those countries where voting is compulsory for federal elections, for state elections, and for council elections, local council elections. And so, if you're overseas or something of that nature, then, you're not bound to vote. You can vote, but you're not bound to if you're overseas. But if you're in the country, even if you're away from your home, you are required by law to vote. And, there's pros and cons for that approach. I don't think it's a bad thing. Because if you really feel strongly enough that the system is fundamentally broken, then what they can't do is force you to fill out a valid vote. So it's called voting informally. That is, you enter a vote, you enter a polling booth and be registered for having gone to that polling booth. There's nothing to stop you filling out the form wrongly or not filling it out at all. And, of course, in that case, your vote doesn't count inside the system. So, you've fulfilled your legal obligations, but you haven't had your hand forced to choose between candidates that you may not support for whatever reason. So, I think there are pros and cons for both scenarios. As I say, Australia is one of those countries where voting is compulsory.
That reminds me of a story about early Rome. Early Rome, people voted there. People on the outlying areas would come into the city itself if they wished to vote. And they voted with either a black stone or a white stone. And they counted the stones to see what was successful.
Interesting.
I thought it was. There's a lot of customs that we can go back to ancient Rome and see where it began.
Yes.
So we're waiting for your call here at BBS Radio. Got a lot of things that you could talk about. You have Richard here to ask questions of that he's not usually here. You could ask me and about healing, reincarnation, early memories. What might be your early memory that you have when you came to Earth in this incarnation. I always find that interesting. Well, I asked the audience that question. Richard, what is your early memory in this lifetime?
I don't have really early memories. I don't have memories from, say, when I was a baby or one or two that I recall. Probably one of my most vivid early memories was I grew up on a farm, and the farm was a couple of miles away from where the house was. It's kind of interesting because we lived on the edge of the little area, the quarter of acre area that was on the edge of the property that was purchased by my grandfather and was then owned and run by my uncle. And the farm that my father had was actually, we lived in Victoria, and the farm that we had was in South Australia, which is very obviously very close to the border. So we'd cross back and forth, twice each day, go home for lunch and go back. And on this particular day, my father and that particular uncle were working together. I can't remember what they were doing. And I was up at the shed, and my father thought my uncle had taken me home. I don't know why he thought that, but he did. And so I was left at the farm, and he drove home. And so I think I was about four at the time. And so I was faced with either waiting or walking home. And so I walked most of the way home by the time my father came back to get me. And so I remember that it was a fairly traumatic memory for a long time. I think I amazed a lot of people that I knew how to get home at that age. But it's probably not that surprising. I mean, most four-year-olds have a pretty good idea about where they are if they go there pretty regularly. But so it was a bit of a trauma of sorts that I recall. Probably that's the strongest early memory.
My earliest memory was how I was learning how to walk. I don't know how old I was, but I was a little higher. When I stood up, I was a little taller than the seat on the sofa. And I can remember running my finger over the little tufts in the sofa, how I was so intrigued with that. And there was a cocktail table in front of the sofa. And so I was leaning against the sofa, and I turned around, and I took one step, and I made it to the cocktail table. And I can remember, that was my first step, and I can remember the joy I felt in accomplishing that.
Yes, they're quite milestones when you're that young.
It was. Absolutely. And so it reminds me of something that we feel on a level perhaps that we don't understand or not conscious of when we accomplish something, no matter how trivial it is. There's a part of us that's very proud of ourselves. And so all I can say about that is to be proud of yourself. Allow that. And be proud of those around us when they do something that you feel they should deserve some sort of acknowledgement from you. As I said earlier, there is nothing but love and forgiveness. That's all there is.
Indeed. And so it's time for us to wrap up, Carolyn. And so I thank you for an entertaining
time. Do you need to
tell
me that hour has gone already?
Yes, it sure has, right out the door.
Richard, thank you for being with us.
It's been a pleasure, Carolyn. And thank you for all that you do.
You're welcome. Goodbye for now until next week. This
Indeed.
Is Carolyn Evers.
Now.
talk to you then.